Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, hello. Nice fabric. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the backyard. It's my pleasure to welcome you to the celebration of our largest parish in Jamaica, and that would be St. Elizabeth. And I want to welcome my callers online and also those calling in on our call-in number, which is 718-766-4558 for those of you who might not be near to your computer. Or if you are on the computer and want to interact with us, please remember that that's our call-in number because I'm not able to interact with you online right now. I have not refined my skills at doing that yet. So welcome to the backyard, and I want to tell our callers on the board, if you want to say hello and interact with me about St. Elizabeth, just hit 1 on your telephone, and I'll see that you've raised your hands like we used to do when we were in school in Jamaica. If you want to talk, you have to put up your hand. Well, now do it the techie way and just touch 1 on your telephone, and I'll see that you're raising your hand. So again, welcome to the backyard, and I see we have callers from 631-816 and 718-379, so let me know when you want to join the Labrish. So let me just tell our listeners that may come once we've closed the show, you know, we're archived, so you can tell your friends to go by anytime and check out whatever shows they want. I also want to make a request that if you do go on our on the Blog Talk site or on our website, just be sure that you mark our show a favorite, but because that gives us some brownie points with Blog Talk Radio. So let me just start off by giving you a little history about St. Elizabeth, one of Jamaica's largest parish. It is located southwest of the island. I'm looking on the map, and as you can see, it's way south. And it's in the county of Cornwall for the history students or specialists. You will remember that Jamaica has 3 counties, Cornwall, Middlesex, and Surrey, which was named after the British style. My favorite and loyal listener from the Bronx always remind me of things that I might have forgotten, but it was styled from the English, how it is in England, that we have three counties, Cornwall, Middlesex, and Surrey. So St. Elizabeth is in Cornwall, and its capital is Black River, and it is located at the mouth of a river, actually, and that is the longest river on the island. Now, it was originally included in most of the southwest part of the island, but in 1703, Westmoreland was taken from it, and in 1814, a part of Manchester. So, you know, just like they're doing now, they will take parts of one city and merge it in or form a new city. Where I live in the south here in Georgia, we just became a new city about 2 years ago because parts of other parts of where we live was put together to form a new city. So I suppose this goes back from the time people were claiming lands, I suppose. Anyway, as we traveled over the different parishes, we've been talking about why they were named, what they were named, and who they were named after, which some people might find interesting. But anyway, Westmoreland, actually, was named after the wife of Sir Thomas Mudford, the first English governor of Jamaica. So most of the Barl Island is named after somebody in those days. Now, there are traces of Arawak Indians that still exist in the parish, as well as Spanish settlements. Now, after 1655, when the English settled on the island, they concentrated on planting sugarcane. Today, buildings with Spanish walls, mason and limestone sand, and stone between wooden frames are still seen in some areas. So we still have some structures that go back that far, according to Wikipedia. And this information I'm giving you, I gathered from Wikipedia. I always also have a very interesting encyclopedia of Jamaican heritage by Olive Senior that I quote almost every week, and I would like to at least give her some credit. It's just a marvelous encyclopedia, and it sort of lists almost everything you can think of, including, you know, our customs and some of the words that we use that might not be known in other cities or countries or cultures. So it's a marvelous publication if you're interested in that. So I'll tell you some facts from that later on. Anyway, St. Elizabeth became a prosperous parish, and Black River is an important seaport. In addition to shipping sugar and molasses, Black River became the center for the logging trade. Large quantities of logwood were exported to Europe to make a Persian blue dye, which was very popular in the 18th and 19th century. So I always get fascinated to know all the different things that Jamaica or Jamaicans have contributed to all over the world. Because here it is now something in Westmoreland, in Black River, Black River transported the logging, I suppose. But in Jamaica, the logwood was exported to Europe to make dye. So I thought that was very interesting. But last week, we talked about running water being established in Falmouth before it was even they had it in New York. And I want to just back up a little and tell you I did not explain why. And if any listeners that are on from last week will remember, it's because that was a laid-out community, almost like a subdivision. And if you remember, you know, people bought lots and built condominiums. So I suppose because of its planning and I suppose where it was located, they had running water in these condominiums before anywhere else, at least before New York. And now here we have electric power was first introduced in Jamaica in a house called Waterloo in Black River in 1893. How awesome is that? Can you imagine electric power being on our little island from that time? Now, it doesn't say how the electricity was powered. I didn't see any information on that. But whatever means they used, it's good to know that they had electricity. Now, at least electric power. The parish is, I mentioned where it was north of. It's west of Manchester, and people from Jamaica can perhaps figure out the proximity of all these other parishes. But people from Westmoreland know that we're always passing through, or, you know, it's not too far from us. And Westmoreland is coming up next week, and that's where I used to go quite often, so I'm getting quite excited to share a little bit about what I remember about that particular parish. So I'm still waiting for some of my listeners to raise their hands as I go along here. My co-host isn't with me this week, so don't let the backyard be lonely, guys. Grab a chair, make yourself comfortable, and join the labyrinth. Anyway, let's get back to my documents here. Now, the main river in the parish, of course, is Black River, and it's the longest river in Jamaica. Not only is the parish the largest parish, St. Elizabeth is the largest parish, as well as having the longest river. So, you know, it has some things to be proud about. It is navigated for about 25 miles, and it's supported by many tributaries, of course. It's only until I started this research I realized that we had so many rivers in so many different parishes, and a lot of them at some points go underground, and then they come out someplace as a beautiful waterfall or a sinkhole or something. So it's really interesting how much you don't pay attention to the geography and the history, at least I didn't, when you're growing up or when you're young, but all of these interesting things were available to us, I suppose. It just wasn't, I didn't have time for it, or I didn't remember it or something. But I didn't even realize we had so many rivers running all over the island. Because, you know, I remember there was a river in Kingston when we went up to, I think it was Hope Gardens. But other than that, I didn't pay too much attention to the different rivers. But it's interesting to know. So, well, I see a raised hand, and I am going to open the mic to 718-379. Let me see here. Good evening. This is Margaret on Backyard Lavish.
Yeah, this is Leigh from the Bronx, the home of the New Yankees. York Yankees.
Yes, sir. Yeah. I was just missing you. I wonder if you were on.
No, I was listening to what you were saying, and if we didn't know anything else in Jamaica when we were young, we knew that we had a lot of rivers.
Well, I didn't, because I only went to one country and there was no river there. There was just beach.
Doesn't matter. There's rivers and springs and
oh,
water.
Oh, yes, I know that, but not as many as I've been discovering.
Well, now you discover it, but then that was one of the first things we learned in geography class. And what we couldn't understand was that there was so much rivers all over the place, and there is always a water shortage.
Right.
If you can remember, there was always a water shortage.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that is an interesting topic.
Right,
that
sure is.
Haunted me even as far as acquiring a property in Falmouth. And there's a river running right along the highway.
Well, I suppose it's a matter of harnessing the river, you know,
exactly.
For the cultivation.
Exactly.
That didn't happen. But it seems to me, Leigh, that if they had electric power
right.
in Black River, they must have harnessed it from somewhere.
Well, it's one thing to say that they had electricity in that at that time, but as you might, and you just put your finger on it. Don't forget, we had all the, a lot of sugar mills and different kinds of operations to that they used to have generators. In addition to whatever electricity they had. So, in other words, we were the government was saying later for the residents, you would have to get out your lamp. Every Jamaican has a lamp, even now.
Right.
And when they graduated from those kerosene lamps, they mm-hmm. had these power gas lamps. That
right.
I when you visit into the people in the country, call them country people.
Mm-hmm.
They you would look at people and figure out that they were getting up in the world when they had a gas lamp.
Right, that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I mean, it does it, by having the electricity, it doesn't necessarily mean that
the houses
were electrified.
Right.
Right.
Uh-huh. But at least we know that they had electric power. It's mentioned
here. Yes, this
here
is true. This is a big achievement, of course.
Right. It was introduced in Jamaica in a house called Waterloo in Black River in 1893. And I suppose a big deal was made of it.
Well, of course.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But anyway, the parish has many features that make it different from the rest of the country, including the vegetation. Now, most of the southern part of the parish consists of dry savannas divided into two by the Santa Cruz Mountain that run north to south. Up to early in the 20th century, the economy of the area was based on raising of cattle and horses and growing cassava and fishing. It was a big cattle town, at least parish.
I had a piece of cassava today, I can tell you that.
Really? I'm sure it didn't come from St. Elizabeth.
Oh, who knows? Nowadays, you know, there's one time when you would think that all these kinds of foods, in fact, came from Jamaica.
Right.
But, you know, as we grew up and we visit other islands, other countries, we realize that...
they have
like
similar
cassava.
Food.
What did they call them? Call this kind of food when we were growing up, hard food or
right, grown provision.
Yes.
There
are a lot of other countries that produce this kind of food.
Right. Now the area had at times been subject to unrelenting droughts. On occasion, no rain falls for over a year.
Yeah.
Thus, one area is called Labor in Vain. They actually have an area of St. Elizabeth that is called Labor in Vain. I suppose because no matter what you plant, you know, you have problems.
Yeah. Do you know where that was near?
No, I didn't. It's not mentioned here.
I have a very good map of Jamaica, but like anything else, when I tried to find it this afternoon, I couldn't.
Okay. Now, as a result of the harsh conditions of life here, the migration out of this parish has been higher than anywhere else in Jamaica. In other words, more people leave St. Elizabeth than any other part of the island. Now, I thought that was an interesting tidbit. In the mid-19th to early 20th century, some of the young men simply left for more prosperous parts of Jamaica, and places such as the Bahamas. The banana parishes in the east. They moved around in Jamaica. Many thousands headed for Latin America when there were heavy demands for wage labor on projects such as the construction of the Panama Canal. So they had more people, more men leaving from St. Elizabeth to go than any other parish they mentioned here. And then, of course, the people would leave there to go to other parts of the island just in order to get work. So they went to Costa Rica, to Guatemala, to Mexico, and Cuba. That is according to the document.
You left out one important. My grandfather was from the area, actually from West Mullen. My other grandfather, not.
Oh, your mother's father?
My mother's father, and he went to Panama.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you're right. They all went down. All the men, from those countries that you mentioned.
Uh-huh.
Went down. The big attraction was the Panama Canal, and they all went down there.
Right. And they said, now, in more recent times, the United Kingdom, Canada, and the United States have been the destination of the migrants.
Yeah.
Now, the impact of recent immigration is seen in this substantial new housing being built throughout the parish. Apparently people are moving back, replacing the characteristic old style Spanish wall thatch roof dwellings. And I want to talk about
right.
That because you're
right about that, Madge, because the very people that you just mentioned that left way back when, their children and some of them who are still alive choose to return to that area. Especially Manchester and
St. Elizabeth.
Mm-hmm. I know for and they these people had their parents or they themselves were beneficiaries of large land holdings.
Yes.
And these lands were divided up, and they also had large families.
Mm-hmm.
So invariably you'll find that they are in court trying to administer the parceling out of lands to their siblings.
Right.
And this is a big thing in Jamaica where the lawyers are in concert with one faction. And
oh, yes, definitely. That is so common.
A big thing, very common.
And that is the person paying them the most.
Yes.
I know two families here or two people here that are involved in something like that, you know, the division of the properties. And you hear who left and didn't pay attention to what and, you know, all sorts of.
Yeah, I know more than two.
Right.
But the fact still remains that the houses that they're putting up in these areas
uh-huh.
are unbelievable. Have you been in that area?
No, I haven't been to other than, you know, going on a cruise and stopping in one of the ports for a day.
Yeah, well,
I haven't been there in perhaps 15 years or more.
Cruise ports aren't on this side of the island.
But
the point is that people who are returning
mm-hmm.
are putting up what we would call
elaborate houses.
Mansions.
Yeah. I mean, some of them look like things you would see in Hollywood.
Yeah.
And I think for some foreigners, that's hard to imagine. But, you know, with the views that some of them have and the, you know, the design and the structure, I mean, it would be like a house for one of the movie stars.
Yeah, well, the type houses that they put up, if you recall, you know, you might even call them great houses of the past.
Right.
They're similarly fashioned, even uh-huh. though they have a modern slant to them, but they're typical of
like the great plantation houses.
Yes.
Right, definitely.
And this is kind of unbelievable in this day and age.
Mhm. But as a child, you know, when I was young, I remember my father was involved with a church in Spanish Town where I lived for a little while. And, you know, some of his converts were from St. Elizabeth. And I remember going there to spend some time with a family who lived in one of these thatch houses that is mentioned here. And, I mean, the houses were made like that because of the terrain, number one, and because of the soil that they had. Because, you know, they have a clay soil. And
well,
the thatch is like any I would say, shingles here because they're leak-proof.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes. And I remember that the floor was just like tiles, but all it was is clay. That's all it was. I remember that's where I got bitten and had to be taken by boat to Black River, to the hospital, by a canoe, of course. And I think it was Treasure Beach that we sailed out of. But it's funny, when you're young, if you, anything traumatic happened to you, I think a dog bit me and it got infected. That's all I remember. And I remember the kind of food that they ate. I see that my co-host is on, and I want to open up the mic and welcome her. Good evening, Donna.
Good evening. I've been
Hey, Donna.
Doing great, Leigh. I've been listening in.
Yes, Donna.
And I want to take this opportunity.
Hear what Donna came up with. This is one part of the island, Donna, that I am not as familiar with as I am with the northern part of the island. Even though I've been through, I would say, a total of about 3 times. But I find that this area fascinates me more than anywhere else because it's kind of mysterious, adventurous type terrain.
But I am surprised that is so because it's not far from where your grandfather is from.
Well,
St. Elizabeth is not far from Westmoreland, is it?
No.
Manchester. It's in the general vicinity. It's not like the other side of the island.
Don't forget that in my case, I didn't know until maybe 15 years ago any of that.
Oh, really?
No, I didn't know them because the grandfather and grandmother, they all went to Panama.
Oh, I got
you. And the immediate family were all there. Before some of those that were born there in Panama went to Cuba and other Latin American islands.
Right.
So, but I didn't know them.
Oh, didn't know them.
No, right.
Well, I want to take this opportunity to tell our listeners that our co-host has a birthday earlier in the week.
So happy birthday
to her.
Oh,
Donna, you were alluding last week. You were very interested in the rum that the estates were making. So, did you have a little drink there?
Yeah, the way you all talk about Jamaican rum, I don't know. I don't know if I can handle that. But I did have some wine, but that was pretty much my extent of that.
No, don't get us rum in. I'm sorry. Don't get us wrong. It's not just white rum that's available. There are some very sophisticated rums that people even think maybe brandy when it's aged. So, there's some.
Are you referring to like Captain Morgan?
No. There's an Appleton
special. Appleton.
If I get up and look in my cupboard, I should be able to tell you what it is. But
okay, well, Donna, we'll have to fly you up there to get some of Lay's special.
No,
they
might say I have illegal provisions hanging around.
Oh, I see.
But this is
you have to come this way and bring some and come hang out with us.
It's Appleton Estate Extra.
Oh, I guess.
I think it's 12-year-old, so you can imagine that it's good stuff.
I also would like to say that we have a we have several liqueurs, but the most popular one is the coffee liqueur.
Oh, that's Tia Maria?
Tia Maria, yes. And we're going to talk about the liquors and things one day.
Yeah.
Let me just tell you, so happy birthday, Donna, belated.
Thank you.
Chin-chin.
Half backyard labyrinth.
Chin-chin.
Yeah. Now, remember I told you that early back in the days, in 18-something, it was a big horse and cattle parish. Now, they say the droves of horses and cattle that used to roam the plains are no more. Much of the livestock died out in the droughts, and the demand for horses were sharply curtailed with the advent of the motor car. So actually, during the days of the horse and buggy is when it used to be a big horse and cattle parish. Now, as the population has grown, the land has been divided into smaller and smaller units, reducing the large areas necessary for free ranging and grazing. So you see how one thing affects the other. You know, as people leave an area and there's less demand for anything, you know, things change. So we're constantly, as occupants of the earth, in a state of change. So we have to say change is good. Now, fertile soil is part of the southern St. Elizabeth. They have a topsoil of clay, and they have fertile red clay under the topsoil. So I suppose it makes that's why it makes it so hard, because it's like two different types of soil laying on top of one another. They say here the residents of places like Pedro Plains have to be extremely careful about their methods of cultivation and have derived techniques to conserve what they have. The technique is described as EYRE. How do you pronounce that, Leigh?
Eerie.
Eerie. So I thought that was one of the phrases the Rasta people used. Oh, it's IRE, they
might
say.
IRI.
Oh, okay. Now, the main technique is fly penning and mulching, using the savanna grass that grows rapidly after the rain. The farmer cuts the grass and spreads it thickly in an enclosed field where he puts his livestock to provide manure. Listen to this. He plants his crop in the enclosure and moves the animals when the plants appear. The process will be repeated in another small plot as there is savanna grass available. By this means, several crops can be grown during the year and even with a little rain. So you see how people can get creative when they have a need. So they find a way, even when they have a drought, because the between the grass and the animals, you know, help the plants to survive. I thought that was very clever.
Explain that to me again. I didn't get that one.
Well, in certain parts of that particular parish, they have a lot. They're you know, susceptible to droughts.
Mm.
So the farmers in that area have devised a technique that they use, and it's called some penning and mulching. That's what they call it, I suppose.
You see,
they use the savanna grass that grows
right,
in that area.
I was
area.
About to say, Donna, they call certain areas savanna because in these areas they have a type of soil that is that needs to be contained for irrigation, and they use the certain kind of grass. This is how they call these wide expanses savannas, because by having this grass, even in the times when you have no rain, the soil is contained with
moisture.
Mm-hmm. Wow! And so they're actually moving this grass around?
No, they don't move the grass around. The grass grows on the savanna. In other words, that's what it is.
They move the animals around.
Yeah.
To leave the manure.
Right. They move the animals. And they plant, like they would plant out, I suppose, I don't know, they use the grass for mulch.
Yeah.
And they use the animals for fertilizer.
Uh-huh.
But they do it in sections where they would, you know, plant up an area and have that secure. Then they move the operation to another area of their property.
You ever notice, like, even in Asia, when they're planting certain things, they use animals to drag the...
The equipment.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's some similar stuff.
Only that we don't use it to drag the thing. We use it as a you-know-what, a fertilizer. The savannas are noted for the production of certain crops. Tomatoes, melons, carrots, scallions, sweet pepper, tobacco, and corn. Now, in the north part of the parish, sugar is widely grown, and Appleton Estate, which you just mentioned, is the home of the famous rums. In recent years, bauxite mining and low-scale tourism has helped diversify.
And once again, Donna hasn't been to Jamaica, so she'll be heading down there fast when she gets there. To get some of that Appleton, right, Donna?
Yeah.
Perhaps we'll leave the factory.
I'll do like all the time, you know, get started early in the day and invite people over.
Okay.
Well, I want to remind our listeners that you're listening to Backyard Labrish. We're just here sitting in our easy chairs, pretending to feel the trade winds blow across our cheeks as we labrish about different parishes. We're doing a segment called Discover Jamaica, One Parish at a Time. We have done several parishes. It has been so interesting to find out what grows where and what has what caves and how many rivers are over here and who did that where. I mean, my head has just been spinning with all this discovery, because I think that as we toured, we have just found a lot of little nuggets of information that has been quite intriguing. So I would like to just talk. Lady, do you have something to say?
No, I was just observing that this particular area, if you can call it soil deterioration over time, they've lost quite a bit of their ability to grow some of the things that you had mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
And something that we did not mention is that this area was quite a destination for tourists who visit the island, because it has fishing communities that are very interesting to them, and lobsters and seafood of a great variety of sea types are cultivated down there, you know.
Oh yes.
I just thought I'd mention that.
And you know, I remember that when I was...
Excuse me, I'm going to switch phones. My phone is giving me trouble.
Okay.
Right,
I remember that, you know, Don, I want to mention, and to our listeners that might not be from Jamaica, that although we are such a small island and people always believe that we know everything across the island sort of operates the same, but even sometimes the way they prepare a dish in one part of the island is not necessarily the same way they do it in another part. Mm-hmm. And I remember distinctively when I was there as a young child that they had a special way to do their peas. And because I mentioned that they grow cassava there,
mm-hmm.
They have bamis. They're noted for their bamis. That is something we make from the cassava that we eat sort of for breakfast or brunch, Donna.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
And where most of the other part of the island makes it, you know, a certain way. In St. Elizabeth, I remember at the time, they made it almost like a taco, you know, flat and thin. And they would take the grains, the peas in particular, that grew in the backyard and make a special stew and put it inside of the bami and fold it together. So when I came here, especially here to Atlanta, and saw the tacos from the, you know, Mexican restaurants, I really had a flashback of that from, you know, in the 40s, that when I visited this particular parish, that's the way they had a dish that was similar to that. And I'd never seen it in Kingston, where I grew up, or any other part of the island, for that matter. I don't know if any of our listeners are familiar with what I'm talking about, but, you know, it was, it looked like, I would compare it to a taco, only because it's made from a cassava, and it's not a stiff. You know, the taco is sort of stiff, and that's made from corn. This was made from the yuca, you call it here. And we can still get bamis here, you know, I bet, but I've never seen that thin one, and I've never seen it anywhere else but in St. Elizabeth.
Now, are you saying that the bami is the same as the cassava?
The bami is made from the cassava.
Oh.
The bami is made from the cassava, but I'm just saying in different parts of the island, they make the same thing but a little different, you know, and perhaps use it differently.
So the bami is what you're talking about, looks like a taco?
Right.
Oh, okay. Because I've heard of cassava, but I didn't know what it was. And I went to look to see what it was, and pretty much what they were saying is it's pretty much native to, like, South America and Caribbean.
Right. So, and here they call it, you can get it in the store in the, you know, the food places, and it's called yuca.
Yeah, but it's interesting because, you know, they're saying it's the third largest source of carbohydrates for human food in the world.
Really? I didn't know that.
It says Africa's its largest center of production, and the flour made from the root is called tapioca.
And yes, we usually have a lot of tapioca as our cereal when we were growing up. Tapioca was very popular.
Yeah. And they're just kind of talking about that there's different types. Some are bitter and some are sweet. A lot of farmers like the bitter ones, but you have to be pretty careful with them and stuff like that. So it was pretty interesting. And then they actually went through and they said that for us we call it yuca, but for most Spanish speaking people they had different names for Brazilian people, Haitian people. I mean Paraguay, Nigerians, Ghanaians, Swahili. They named all these different predominantly African, South America, Caribbean countries, and every last one of them have a different name for it.
Really? I didn't even know that. And, you know, that used to be used a lot when I was young and growing up. I mean, we used a lot of cassava. We really did. We ate the cassava before it was processed, and it's processed to make the bami. But I see that we have a caller from 954 with a raised hand, so I'm going to open up the mic and welcome. 742, you're on. Welcome to the backyard. This is Margaret.
Hi, Margaret.
Who am I speaking with?
You're speaking to Elaine.
Hey, Miss Elaine. Well, at last we have someone from the parish we're discussing.
Exactly.
As I know you're from St. Elizabeth.
I'm from the heart of St. Elizabeth.
Ooh, and the heart is the most important part. So what city would that be?
I grew up in Bull Savannah.
Bull Savannah, yes, I have it as one of my cities here.
And that is the southern part of St. Elizabeth. And as a child, you know, it was a small village, and it was almost all by itself. You know, geographically, it was like, you know, the end of a little section.
I got you.
Well, I grew up, and in that area, as a child in the 30s, each child belonged to the whole village.
Oh, so truly you were raised by the village.
Right. I was brought up by my grandparents, but at that time, I remember there was a boom. Because a gentleman named Major Moxie came to the village, and he saw that the people needed encouragement. So he said, you know what, start to grow vegetables, especially tomatoes.
Mm.
So they formed an association, and arrange for shipments to Canada and other countries.
Now, was this a Jamaican person?
No, he was not a Jamaican, but had lived in Jamaica.
Oh, I got you.
I think he was from Ireland.
Uh-huh.
So he had the know-how, how to do that.
Uh-huh.
They formed the association. But, you know, food was always in abundance at that part of St. Elizabeth. It was, there was long periods of drought, but there were lots of food. But it was a happy place. Everyone laughed. They swapped stories over coffee in the mornings. We ate mainly peas, fish, lobster, goat meat, goat milk, and cassava.
Wow. So let me ask you something. How did you eat the cassava?
Well, the cassava has a long process. It is a root plant. So
right.
It's picked up, and the skin is taken off, and it is grated,
mm-hmm.
and then it comes down to a mushy thing. You put it in a pan, and you put it in a bag, a specially made thatched bag. Put it under a press with wood and let all that bitter juice comes out of it.
So the juice is actually bitter?
Yes. And bitter, and it ends up being like a flour.
Uh-huh.
And then that is processed more where it's sieved, and that becomes the material for the bami, which is so famous all over the world now.
Oh, yes. Well, is it famous for other people or just Jamaicans?
It is Jamaicans primarily, but because it's so popular, it's all over because so many Jamaicans live abroad.
Oh, yes, I know what you mean. But let me ask you something. Do you know, prior to going to St. Elizabeth and seeing, I was quite a young person at the time, this flat bami, this thin bami, I had never seen it in Kingston.
No, because it's processed. Nothing like that happens in Kingston. It's happened primarily in St. Elizabeth.
I see.
Yes, it's a hot gridiron. And then
uh-huh.
they put a ring around it so that it can have a smooth edging. And then when it gets hot, it's turned over, and bam, there you have the bami.
So what holds it together? I know you say it becomes like a flour. So after you take the juice out, what holds the whole thing together?
Because it's a starch, so it holds itself.
Ah, so you don't really take all the juice out.
Yeah, all the juice goes. So you don't need anything. What holds it is you put that flour in the rim on the hot grid, and that holds it. And when you turn it, like a toast, you take off that edge and you turn it over, and it becomes...
Oh, I got you.
That's a pancake.
But right.
Although pancake has to be liquid, this is not. This is like a flour.
Right, I got you. Well, Elaine, you know, it was the first place that I saw them take the bami and put like a stew in it, grains. I think it was gungo peas, green gungo, perhaps cooked up with meat.
Yes.
And then they folded it over. And I forgot what they called it.
You can do anything, but primarily the people in southern St. Elizabeth like to eat it with fish because fish is one of their staple food.
Right, right.
We have an area called Alligator Pond, which the fish from Alligator Pond is out of this world. And once you get that fish cooked, or with some fresh cooked lobster, and you fold that into the bami, then that's really, really.
So you actually fold it in. You see, in the bami that we get in Kingston is so big, you can't fold anything in it.
Well,
you just have to prepare it by itself.
When it's just done off the hot grid, it's.
Uh-huh.
It's foldable, it's eatable, but then by the time it gets to Kingston, it becomes, it's not
dry.
Right,
I got you. So, Elaine, you mentioned to me a little bit about your grandmother and our special coffee and where your grandmother was from. You want to tell us a little bit about that?
The coffee, well, my grandmother was the comedian of the whole village.
And where was she from?
She was from a nearby area called Ballard's Valley, but she had a lot of jokes with a few choice words in between, and she would tell all these stories. So because everybody in the village loved to hear her laugh, they would all gather at my grandmother's house, and she would have a cup of coffee for each one of them.
Wow.
Would laugh, and you know, that went on. And I, as a child, they reared me, but I would go outside, listen to the laugh, and I would have my cup of hot goat's milk.
All right.
Well, they were hardworking, the women. After that, they had gone into the fields and to do what they had to do. But I noticed as a child that there were some color prejudices in the area. But that went away over the years.
Well, as you say that, I want to talk about a little that I got from Wikipedia.
Yes.
On the racial mix. They say that the parish has a population of about 148,000. This was the 2001 census.
Right.
And 400,000 of which live in the capital town of Black River, I suppose.
Really?
Now, the distinct feature of this parish is that numerous ethnic groups can be found there. St. Elizabeth probably has the greatest racial mix in Jamaica.
Yes.
Now, when the MISKITO, MISKITO Indians came from Central America to help track the Maroons in the 18th century, they were given grants in that parish. In the 19th century, the Irish, Spanish, Portuguese, Scots, and Germans migrated to St. Elizabeth. And this accounts for the pockets of distinct racial mixes in the parish.
I don't know about that other part, but the part where I grew up, the mix came from England and Scotland.
That's right. They mentioned Scots here.
Yes. And that's why we have the name in our family. We have the name Elliot. That's
mm-hmm.
a Scottish name, Elliot. So they came, and that's why you find you then... And because of that, we had this, I don't know, there was this little color thing. But then it disappeared over the years.
Well, let me ask you something. I always know, you know, being in Kingston, that in you can always know, we could always sort of tell who was from St. Elizabeth. Because you had some, in those times, call them strange people. You would have light brown people with one blue eye and one green eye.
I have green eyes.
And I know. And gray eyes. And but I have seen people from St. Elizabeth with two different color eyes.
Well, that happens. And not only that, but you can have someone with two types of hair.
Right. You mean two types on the same head?
The same head. I have it. Because... the hair on top of the head is like, it's so different. It's and then the hair underneath around the head is a completely different type. So eyes and hair and everything else, who cares?
No, I know, but I mean, it's even listed here in Wikipedia as that particular parish having the most of that kind of mixes. And as I read it, I remember as a child, as a matter of fact, in a lot of cases, people would refer to people from St. Elizabeth as St. Elizabeth Redibo.
They're not, well, they could call them whatever they want. They were people from Scotland. And these were people who came to the area. They were looking for an area to settle, to
Right. Now, you mentioned that your grandmother was her parents were from Scotland.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So she could trace her, but she was born in Jamaica.
She was born in Jamaica, but she was a completely white woman who fell in love with a black man, my grandfather.
And he was black, or he was mixed?
No, just no. Not when I say black, you know, not necessarily. Well, not
wasn't white.
Right.
Okay.
But, hence they had children of every hue that you could ever imagine.
Mm-hmm. Rainbow colors.
Rainbow colors, and that's fine. That's wonderful. And left-handed and all that sort of thing. So it was a lovely, lovely time growing up there. And I want to tell you that my aunt, Aunt Calm,
uh-huh.
She's 92 years old. She loves life. And if our best time right now, excuse me, is remembering her life growing up in Bolsavano.
And, you know, I am hoping that one day I'll be able to speak to Aunt Calm and she can give me some of her stories and we can share it with the world right here on Blog Talk Radio, Backyard Library. So I'd like to remind our listeners online and our board is all lit up and I would like to remind you that you're listening to Backyard Library on Blog Talk Radio. We're here each Wednesday at 8 o'clock just lavishing about the beautiful island of Jamaica and back in the days. We're not into politics or who's right or wrong. Or we're just into what happened that we can celebrate and discovering things about our island that we might not have paid too much attention to when we were there, for those of us who might have been there for just a short time, because I personally have spent more time, much more time away from Jamaica than I have there. As a matter of fact, I've lived in the state that I'm living now longer than I ever lived in Jamaica. But, you know, I still have fond memories, and I'm still a Jamaican at heart.
Did I tell you my name? My name is Elaine.
Yes, Elaine. And where do you live?
I live in Sunrise, Florida.
Oh, okay. And do you have grandchildren? Are you a youngster?
If I'm a youngster?
Yes.
Get out of here. I'm old and I'm just, I'm full of laughter.
Oh, I know that. Well, I'm just pulling your legs because I know who you are, but I want our listeners to know a little bit about you. And I'm so thrilled that you're joining us in the backyard. And I hope you'll invite some of your friends to just call in and relax with us for a little while.
Well, let me tell you, just before I go, that my grandson, his name, we call him Jojo, and when he comes to visit me, this is what he says, Nana, tell me the Bammy story now.
The Bammy story. Oh, how cute is that?
Oh, that's it.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you could share that story with us.
Yes.
And I understand from your cousin that someone in the family is doing some research of how your ancestors got to Jamaica.
Yeah.
I don't know. She shares some of that with me sometimes. Someone who is doing some, like, undersea exploration and found some artifacts from some ship.
Yeah.
Do you know if there's any more work being done on that?
I don't know about that, but we'll talk about that.
Okay, because I'd like to share some of that with our listeners.
Okay.
Because although we are not living in Jamaica anymore, we're still thrilled with news, good news about Jamaica. We always want to celebrate the good things.
Of course.
And that happened because I, for one, like to tell the world that I consider myself fortunate to have been born and raised in Jamaica and just celebrate my heritage all the time.
And I'm pleased my grandparents brought me up, and I'm pleased that I was not just their child alone. I was everybody's child. And if I did anything that was not right, I'm around playing, everybody could say, get on home. Just get on. Stop that.
Isn't that something?
And I look back at it, no, that was just the right
love
to do. Right.
That was love.
Yes, that was love.
Well, you know what? I was just wondering. Now, you said your grandmother's like 95. Is that right?
No.
Your aunt.
Oh, your aunt.
Yes.
Oh, wow. Now, does she still live in Jamaica?
No, she lives up here in Florida, but she thrives on her memories.
Oh.
Still got her memories, so that we need to get some of that on the
air. Record it. Get it recorded. That would be great for everyone. That's wonderful.
Yes.
So, you know, this just goes to show you that, you know, even with the food and how healthy, you know, it is for you. All the food that you're talking about, you know, it's just natural good food for you and the seafood and all the stuff that you're talking about.
Oh, that was just wonderful, wonderful. And I just looked back and said, what a wonderful opportunity we had as children to be in touch with nature, to try to climb trees, to run around barefooted, to fall asleep with my... Let me tell you something, a little thing for us to leave and to remember this. That as a child growing up, and I went to the school, lived with my grandparents, They had no electric lights, of course. So I would come home, and I'm ready for bed, but I have to do my homework. So my grandmother would say, sit at the table now and do your homework. And I'm sitting at the table. I had long, long hair. And every night, the lamp, a piece of my hair would be burnt off.
Because you'd fall asleep?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
Every night, my grandmother would smell the hair burning. And then she would run up and say, get up and go to your bed.
That is so funny.
You know, those little lamps, they were little lamps that had no...
Dead.
Right. And I would be overheat with my hair, half of it burnt off.
Oh, my goodness. Isn't that something?
Those were the days. And did I tell you that there were no locks on the doors?
Oh, no. Yes, I remember those days.
Only chairs. They would put chairs behind the doors.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't know what the chairs were to keep out.
It just made them feel good, I suppose.
Right.
That's what it was.
Okay, Mars, it was nice.
All right. Well, thank you, Elaine, for coming in and share. And I hope you'll come more often. And perhaps one of these days we'll get Aunt Carm to speak with us.
Okay, hon. Bye-bye. All
right. Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
So, again, thanks to our listeners. We're going to talk a little bit about Lover's Leap, which is very famous. As a matter of fact, there's a book written about it. I was hoping to have the author on with me tonight, but we have not been able to track him down. But it's called Lover's Leap, and there is nobody knows if it is a true story, but there's a very fascinating story about what happened at Lover's Leap in the way back in the days. Did you hear about that, Donna? Did you do any research on it?
I actually, that's one of the things that I was really curious about. I saw the map of it, and I said, let me go on there and look and see. But when I clicked on it, all I got was a bigger picture of the map, and I was like, well, I'll go back and I'll pull some information on it. But I haven't as of yet. But I'll look into it. I was looking at the mountain. I mean, this hill, and I'm saying to myself, oh my goodness, did somebody really leap from this, or what is the story behind it?
Well, you know, it's very interesting because, as I say, you know, it's a legend. Just like the White Witch of Rose Hall is a legend, and nobody really knows for sure because, of course, there's no living documentation, you know, of it. But one of the locals from that area wrote a story about it, and it was talked about, you know, in history for some time, but as I say, it's not verified. But Lover's Leap actually is a cliff that really, I understand that the view from this cliff is unbelievable. And that's one of the great things about St. Elizabeth. You know, you have this flatlands, like as Leigh alluded to, that we call the savannah, and you still have heights. It's not as mountainous as some of the other parishes that we spoke about with the Cockpit Mountains and some part of the islands that's actually uninhabitable. But this particular cliff, you know, it goes way down in the sea, and it's very rough terrain on the way down. But it's called Lover's Leap. You know, that's what, I don't know if they call that because of the legend or what. But the encyclopedia I'm reading from talks now about the legend. During the days of slavery, two young lovers used to meet secretly on the property near to what is now called Lover's Leap. The owner of the property on which they were slaves lusted after the girl and arranged for her lover to be sold. Hearing of the plot, the young lovers fled. The planter chased them, and rather than face capture, they raced to the edge of the cliff and hand in hand plunge to their deaths. Now, and that is what the book is about. You know, the book, I suppose, is part fiction because nobody knows about this love affair. But the book is actually called Lover's Leap. But it has a caption here in the encyclopedia by Oliver Sr. It says, however, an old woman who witnessed the incident said that the lovers did not die. Listen to this. The moon caught them up in a golden net and drew them up to it. And they were last seen standing hand in hand on the moon as it sank slowly into the sea. Isn't that dangerous?
That's an interesting twist on it.
I should think so. Very interesting. But for the people who might be
interested. What's interesting is that it seems that so many places have this similar type of story.
Uh-huh.
They have a very similar story in Helen Mountain here in Georgia with regards to two Indian families that were at war with each other, and the only place that there was peace was up under the shadow of this tree, which was by a mountain or something, and that by some small chance the male of the one group and the female saw each other, and it was like love at first sight.
Ooh.
And they would sneak to this spot to meet, and they come to find that that the father of the girl wasn't going to have it, and so he threatened the guy, and the guy said that he would kill himself. And so before he got ready to, he was going to kill himself, she ran and held onto him, and they both went over this cliff.
Oh, my goodness. Isn't that similar?
Yeah. And so when you said that story, I was like, oh, isn't that something? Everybody got a mountain story here.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm saying. You know, it's just a legend. I suppose people with these imagination, I mean, if they see something like that, it lends itself well to that kind of story, you know, love and death.
Yeah. Well,
so I thought that was very interesting.
But, you know, you got to figure that it may be something to it because
who knows? No, in Jamaica, they always say that in some of these stories, there's always some truth.
Yeah, I believe that. I really do. Or maybe it's just the romanticism in people that, you know, makes you want to think that someone would love someone so much. But I think that, you know, even in modern day times, there are people that really love each other so much that they, you know, would sacrifice for each other. I think I'd like to believe that story a bit.
Look at all the
you know, with the moon sucking them up and all, that was a little bit too much for me.
Well, I suppose that gives it a more mystical flavor, but I really thought that was that's really funny. But actually, and a little more about St. Elizabeth. You know, Donna, we've talked about a lot of the parishes. We're on our 13th parish, I think. What are we on? But each parish is so different, and there's so many interesting things about each individual parish.
Mm-hmm.
But what I thought...
It's like so weird because, you know, when I asked Lay, you know, it's like nowadays, you know, it takes you like 2.5 hours, maybe 3 hours to get from one end to the other. I mean, that's like, okay, well, I guess I would kind of equate that from going here to Augusta. But and I don't know everybody from here to Augusta, but... You know, it's like you really would, you know, considering it's only like you go around the perimeter of Atlanta in 2.5 hours, you're still on 285. And, you, of course, you don't know everybody in Atlanta. But, I mean, it's really amazing when you think of, you know, how many people there and how small this place is.
And you can't help but wonder, well, don't everybody kind of, because in Atlanta you kind of bump into certain people all the time. You start to see the same people, you know, all the time. But then you have all these different types of regions, you know, some that are very, very mountainous and, you know, some of them that, you know, they're you know, really growing, you know, vegetables, and some that they're doing something. And so it's like, even though it's all right there, it's all so different at the same time.
Oh, yes. Yes. And, excuse me?
No, I was listening.
Oh, I thought Lee was saying something. But anyway, I think he wants to say something. Just a minute. Let me open up the mic here.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can. I think I can hear you. Hello?
Yeah. Very interesting.
What number are you calling from? 631?
Is it 646?
Okay, your mic is open now.
Okay. Donna?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, well, yeah, it's interesting that you mention that when you're traveling in Jamaica, you're going, actually it's like going through a small town, and you're passing hills and little houses, if you stop, for instance, and go into a village, then you wouldn't believe that there's such a vast amount of people, or even a market in this particular area, you know. And so you could come across all different kinds of territories, different kinds of soil. Different kinds of they talk about the in St. Elizabeth, the karst topography, and we were talking about that before when we mentioned the savannas. So
you would never think about, I mean, like, when I think, of course, you know, I haven't been there, but when you know, all the pictures you see, everything that you're fed in terms of Jamaica, you don't think of mountains. You don't think of caves.
Or you think of beaches.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, you don't think, there's so much that you just really, I mean, you know, when you're thinking about places that are so mountainous that you can't hardly grow anything on them, and the altitude is like really high, and you know, it's like, really? This is Jamaica? You know,
and this is one of the parishes where you are likely to see everything.
Yeah.
You know, including the sea. It's a different view of the sea than you had in let's say even Falmouth that we discussed last week. This area is rugged.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
and caves. You know, I didn't think about caves. You know, when I thought of when you were talking about caves before, I said, well, is that where? Because I thought, and maybe I'm mistaken, but I thought someone had said something about that. You know, a lot of the rust has that gone up into the mountains or caves or something. And so that's the only time that I really thought about, you know, mountains or caves. But I just thought that was just like one little area that maybe.
Oh no, we have caves all over. I mean, they're so famous that people from all over the world come to explore them.
Yeah.
Part of them as well, yeah.
But I want to tell you a little bit now about Black River. Do you know it has the largest wetland in Jamaica?
And
the lower Black River.
Outstanding wetland, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know that. It consists of mangroves, morass, reeds, and floating vegetation. The lower morass is rich in birds and fish, and it provides a habitat for the fast-disappearing turtles, crocodiles, and manatees. Shrimping is still an important industry in Black River. But did you know about all of that? It's more or less like a safe haven for some of these almost extinct life that we have there, like the turtles and the crocodiles.
Yeah.
It's quite interesting.
You said a man. What did you say? A man?
Manatee. It's a mammal.
Manatee is like they have an another name for it.
Like a, almost like a dolphin, but it's
okay.
I mean, Florida.
No.
It's not that. That's not the one that they have in Florida too.
No,
it's the parts
the,
of Florida.
The, yeah, it's pretty much the same thing, but it's not.
A it's a manatee.
Yeah, and it's it's what do you what they call it? There's a loose name that they call it, like like a horse. I'm having a senior moment. I can't tell you what it is.
Welcome to the club.
Speak.
But isn't it a mammal?
Yes.
It's a mammal.
Yes.
Yeah.
It looks like it looks almost like a seal.
Yeah,
that's
but it's bigger.
Like. Yeah.
It's between, I think it's, I would say it's a cross between a seal and a dolphin.
Yeah,
no?
I wouldn't say a dolphin at all. You know, the look of it. If you go along the California coast, you see tons of these things.
Mm.
And it's pretty much the same thing we're talking about. I said tons. That's a very bad expression, but... Yeah, the population of them have dwindled, and it's like an endangered species now.
Isn't it like every place, though? You know, it's like every place where there's, like you were saying, a safe haven for, you know, certain, you know, animals or species that slowly but surely, you know, either through people building or people touring through it, it starts to pollute the area, and then, you know, the whatever's living there, you know, either people, and then also as well as people catching them, and you know, it's just like a combination of various things that began to, you know, take their toll on the nature.
Yeah. I just a little thing that I had observed on Black River, and this says that Black River is Jamaica's longest river, which you mentioned.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm. And its name refers to the darkness of the riverbed that has been lined with thick layers of decomposing vegetation. And you mentioned that too, because sometimes the vegetation gets detached and it floats down the river. It begins as an underground stream in the Cockpit Country that we mentioned last week, and emerges north of the silo on the southern border of the Cockpit.
Right.
At Mogoty, which is a village near Black River, the river runs alongside the road where it's convenient to explore its banks and to view the many small waterfalls and the Black River Gorge. The vegetation is dense and overgrown, and in places, but the valley, the Apple Valley Park, maintains a cleared trail to the gorge, and will also provide a guide for you to go up there, because these areas are not areas where you can run
by yourself.
You have
to be like a guided tour.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And
imagine what kind of insects they have there.
Don't even go there. On my first trip to Black River as a tourist, they put you on this boat, and you go up the river, and then they show you five alligators.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost like a little puzzle. Where are these alligators? Now, the guy cut the motors and showed us one and showed me how he's fed. And I said, okay, we understand that. Let's turn the motor on because there are four more lurking around.
That's interesting.
Right around the boat?
Yes.
Right.
My only thought was, suppose the
boat overturned.
Overturned.
Yes, of course.
It doesn't start up again. You know, this is a hungry beast we're looking at.
Right. But
so,
I.
But it was quite interesting. But getting back to the insects, when the boat is not moving, you look on top of that water, and that water at that particular point
looks black.
It looks black, and it doesn't look like a river that's moving.
Look like a pond.
It looks like a pond. And
mm-hmm.
on top of that is just a sheet of mosquitoes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's why
they had such an outbreak in that particular parish of yellow fever and malaria.
Insects.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, because
so you're right, Donna. This river, it just breeds a lot of critters.
Right. Well, I saw some more information in Olive Senior's book on the electricity layer, and I just wanted to share it before we go off here. It says that the town had the brief glory in the late 19th century, they're talking about Black River, of becoming the first town in Jamaica to have electric lights. So they actually had electric lights. The local family called Leyden, Leyden, installed lighting in 1893 at their house that was called Waterloo. Waterloo is now a guest house, as in another stately home, and is another stately home in the town called, as is another stately home called, in town called something else, Invercargill. And that was built in 1890. So it was actually lights in the house that they were referring to when Wikipedia referred to to Black River as having the first electricity on the island.
Mm-hmm.
But we're talking about 1893. That is awesome.
Yeah.
It's something else.
They must have had quite a bit of money.
Right. Are you familiar with that name, Leyden, Leyden?
I've seen it someplace, but I'm not that familiar with that in my research. I came across Barrett and some other names that are more popular in the encyclopedias, but not that particular name.
Right. Well, you know, there's a spa in Black River, and there's a beautiful waterfall that would be almost similar to Dunn's River. It's not as long in terms of that, but it's gorgeous. It's absolutely gorgeous. It's the Wyeth Falls, it's called. But I wanted to read you a little bit about the Black River Anglican Church. It's the parish church of St. John the Evangelist in Black River, St. Elizabeth Parish. It was built in 1837. It contains marble monuments to Robert Hugh Monroe from 1798 and Cabell Dickinson, who left money for the education of the poor children of the parish. The Dickinsons owned Appleton Estate. For several years, the money was mismanaged until 1850. So I didn't know Appleton Estate went back that far. In 1850, when the trust was reorganized, the Monroe and Dickinson's trust was used for the establishment of two schools, Monroe College for boys and the Hampton School for girls, both located in the hills of Malvern. Monroe was founded in 1856 with 12 pupils, and Hampton in 1858. Shortly after its opening, the boys' school was transferred to a place called Postum in Santa Cruz Mountains, and the school was known as Postum. Up to the First World War, when German names became unpopular, it was then changed to the name of one of the benefactors. Because it was Postum
which was Monroe, yes.
Yeah.
Monroe was a very prestigious boarding school.
Right.
And you would find mostly Europeans going to that school initially.
Right. Postum property was so named by Henry Creft. He was a Jamaican of German aristocrats who sold all his properties when he returned to Europe to be advisor of his cousin, the first king of Belgium. Sir Thierry, is the name, was the surname of his Jewish grandmother. So you see all sorts of connections there, because this was a German who had a Jewish grandmother, German Jew, I suppose.
Very unusual.
Yeah, and they were, he returned to Europe to become an advisor to the king. So they were very, high up aristocrats, I suppose.
Aristocrats, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I'm saying that to say that those were the seeds of a lot of the people from St. Elizabeth that we, you know, were exposed to. Because a lot of them can trace, some of them can actually trace their descendants back to Scotland or England or Belgium or someplace. And quite a few of them are apparently doing it. Because I know in Elaine's case, she was on with us earlier, one of her cousins was telling me that one of their siblings or someone in the family was doing some underwater research, because in their family there's a story about their forefathers being shipwrecked, that they were not really coming to Jamaica or heading for Jamaica, but they were heading someplace else and got shipwrecked in the coral reefs or something like that. And then they disembarked and just went by foot to the nearest place or something and established something there. And these are stories that came down the tubes, because Elaine, were you on when Elaine was on, Leigh? Could you hear? Elaine can trace her grandmother. Her grandmother were of
Scottish.
She was pure Scots. You know, her mother and father were from Scotland.
Yeah.
Even though she was born in Jamaica.
That's why Elaine's eyes are so blue.
Right. So, and you know, I knew Elaine's mother.
Oh, yeah.
And the people from the town I told you I was stranded when I was a little girl with this dog bite, there were people with one blue eye and one green eye.
Yeah,
and there were people with...
That's an oddity.
Really? They very light eyes, you know, light gray, and they were, in my growing up time, they looked really different, very different. And Elaine was mentioning that even their hair on their head could be different. Parts of their hair, like the underneath part, is one texture, part above is another texture. So, you know, it's interesting. But we saw that as we visited and all of that. But growing up, you know, they heard the stories and grew up with the people. Because she always tells me stories about her grandmother, and her mother always tells me stories about her grandmother. So, you know, I went...
You know, it's very curious that the grandparents will tell you stories, which we all want to hear. And then you divide that into grandmother's stories.
Right.
But I would think that the grandfather's stories would be very spicy as well.
Well, you know, in those days, men never speak much, and they never speak much to the women. They spoke to other men.
Yeah, but I'm just reading between the lines here, Marge, with what the men might, if they did speak, what they would tell.
Because your father, I'm sure, died with a lot of stories in him that he never told you.
Yeah.
You know, because there were that quiet thing, and then, of course, children were supposed to be seen and not heard. So we just have a few seconds left. I want to thank all our listeners for listening online and those who called in, and hope you enjoy the lab. Next week, we're going to be talking about Westmoreland, the most western parish. Will be our last parish of the tour. And I hope you'll enjoy it. Join us and invite your friends to join us, even if they're not from Westmoreland, but bring them along backyard. So, Leigh, you have some parting words, my favorite and famous, and from the Bronx, home of the Yankees?
Nice, Ali. Enjoyed the show tonight, and I hope that more people would call in with their experiences as Elaine did. And I know for a fact that there are several other people might have been on but didn't speak.
I know that. I can see their numbers on the board, but I know that one of these days they'll raise that hand and we'll be able to interact.
I think maybe you'll have to do St. Elizabeth and Westmoreland again, because there are so many people actually from that area.
Right.
And,
well, what I'm going to do, I'm going to...
I didn't get a chance to call to speak tonight.
Right. I think what I'm going to do is that each week I might have just a section for a parish shout-out or something. You know, let us know where you're from and what's the custom from your parish or what
you
remember.
You could do a recap, you know. I mean, as I said, people listened, and then they might have a question about their own parish or something like that.
That
wasn't answered. Or they may have a comment that was not presented.
Yes.
So.
But, you know, we extended our show from an hour to an hour and a half, and we still have listeners that call in and hang with us through the whole show. So we really thank you, and it seems like we still run out of time because we're not streaming now. You can still hear me and the people who are on
Janine just called me from
and hear
from
me.
Florida.
Right. But 631, is that Florida? I hope we're welcome to Florida.
I don't know what she what her number
Hold
was.
Hold on, yes.
She wanted if I was on. I said sure, yes.
Right.
But it was a great show. I really enjoyed it.
Yes, thank you, Donna.
I got a lot of information, and I will be checking in next week.
All right.
Okay, so good night to everybody, and glad to have you aboard, and maybe next week we will meet again.
All right, we'll certainly do that. We'll be getting out our chairs and sitting out and hanging out in the backyard. So good night from the home base, and make it a great week. Bye.